morning. My name is Michael McCusker. The re-election of Donald Trump as president of the USA is the nadir, the lowest point of American democracy. Trump is America's manifest dismality, quote unquote. The instant Trump takes the oath of office as president, he should be immediately impeached as a traitor to democracy, which he amply projects. Instead, he is rewarded for his treacherous desire to subvert democracy by being reelected its president, bunny-hopped over an intervening presidency. The malignantly racist, anti-feminist, immigrant-bashing, and repellently male supremacist Trump, whose previous 666 presidency acted as overture to his Napoleonic fanaticism, once again darkens democracy with his crowning reoccupation of the White House. Trump is the dark symbol of disintegration and rotted spoilage of democracy. He and his ilk seem to act as though they are able to be old-fashioned tyrants, considering themselves triumphant over the common rabble, the little people, the hapless, helpless serfs and slaves of yore, as well as more recent black slaves of our own Yankee Doodle past. As though the common everyday folk of now are to be reverted back to medieval chattel, only able to speak, so to speak, when spoken to. And now, as in the old Lone Ranger radio program of yore, return to yesteryear and my first issue of the resurrected North Coast Times Eagle I published for 30 years, straddling two millennia. This, illuminating the presidency of the recently deceased, centennially aged Jimmy Carter, 39th president of the USA, and recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize, and once upon a time, a U.S. Navy submarine sailor. Today is tomorrow's yesterday. We should start with the future, if we have one. It is all we have left. What will it be like? Will our children survive us? And will there be an earth for their children? Will civilization continue to grow, or will it put out its own light and sink the human race once more into the bogs of ignorance and barbarity? We seem so helpless. As the man said, we are going to live in the future the rest of our lives, and yet we tremble in fearful anticipation, numb from too much change too quickly. Not too long ago, tomorrow hardly changed from yesterday. A human being did not expect things to change very much, and at death, which came quickly in those days, not many things had changed from birth. It was that way for centuries. In less than a single century, we seem to have lost almost all resemblance to our predecessors. Our lives seem so removed from them that they might only have been characters in fairy tales, which is all most of us know about them. Recently, we buried ourselves in earlier times, though we have never been certain how we remember them. We bent the direction of our culture, taking almost desperate refuge in the already occurred. Modern life had become too complicated. Everything was confusing and threatening, and every life, rich and poor, had become a Gordian knot. Time was running short. So was everything else. To relieve the pain, we folded into the past. Exactly at the moment, great inspiration and energy were necessary to restructure and guide the civilization through a rapidly approaching period of crisis. the society leaned into other times, to the good old days, though it was never clear which ones were good, and many eras were indiscriminately blended into others. We treasured old movies, old records, old anything. If it was old, it enchanted and comforted us, and we dreamed of the times the old things had survived. Most of us never cared to learn about history, so we were more quickly seduced by the temptations of nostalgia, and we mindlessly yearned for a nebulous past of no shape or form, its real hold on our dreams, the fact it has already passed and is no longer in doubt. President Jimmy Carter scolded us one night. He said we had lost our energy as a culture, though his talk centered on the energy that has enervated us. He told us we were suffering a spiritual and moral crisis, and that we were succumbing to greed and waste. It was a courageous speech for a president. He told us the ship was liable to sink, and that most of the lifeboats were smashed. He lashed out at our compulsive and narcissistic consumption, our worship of materialism. He invoked traditional values of honesty and sacrifice that he said had become sadly rare, and told us we must retrieve the courage of our predecessors. He called upon us to believe once more in the inherent goodness of each other and the nation. He was most concerned that our culture had fallen into decay. Unfortunately, the president also suggested we might have to tear up half the country to appease the insatiable appetites that have caused him so much concern. He called for a mighty effort to revitalize our torpid society and for greater development of synthetic fuels and renewable energy sources. But our greatest reliance would have to be on coal to produce the synthetics, which means strip mining the West, or, as one inspired critic said, the divine right of the East to eat Montana. And the renewable sources of sun and wind are years away from mass development. President Carter said the search for domestic oil should continue, and the next day, in another speech, he added that nuclear power would remain a major energy source. In both speeches, he asked for innovation and flexibility, though his Chamber of Commerce cheerleading offered little of either. At least he tried to wake us up. The evangelist in him made it necessary that he warn us. His Sunday sermon proved he was as bewildered as the rest of us, but he sensed the reasons for our withdrawal into the time vault. He even told us that for the first time in our history, the great majority of us fear the future. He accused us of squandering our options because of that fear, imperiling the future because we have lost faith in it. The paradox should be evident, but if it is, why do we continue to sacrifice our descendants for the impossible attempt to finish our frightened lives in the worlds of our ancestors? Just as no single human can avoid death by retreating into the personal past, a society cannot survive in empty ritual of a fancied, simpler, or more glorious age. Romanticizing the past inhibits the real insights history can provide as we converge with the future, and it dissolves a certain necessary will. It is also a great disservice to minimize the awesome hardships our predecessors were forced to overcome as they slowly produced our civilization. There are signs of awakening, among them the president's public notice of our sleep. Voices tell us that increasing numbers of us are preparing to meet the expected adversity with renewed principle, that all we lack is direction. If that is so, then perhaps all we have done is stop and smell the roses on our way into the 21st century. We have armored ourselves with the familiar, and we have traced our bloodlines. We have spent some time dissecting our souls. If now we can put aside our fears and bury our excesses, we might retrieve the future from the darkness we anticipate. And that was something I wrote. Today is tomorrow's yesterday for my first issue of the North Coast Times Eagle on Friday, 20 July, 1979. And I repeat it in memoriam to the now deceased Jimmy Carter. And now, by Tom Suzy for the New York Times, let's try something different in how we deal with Trump. President-elect Donald Trump and the Republicans have managed to sell themselves as the party of change. It worked. They will soon control the presidency, Congress, and in essence, the Supreme Court. But to change and fix America requires both parties to work together. A Democratic member of Congress, I know my party will be tempted to hold fast against Trump at every turn, uniting against his bills, blocking his nominees, and grinding the machinery of the House and the Senate to a halt. That would be a mistake. Only by working together to find compromise on parts of Trump's agenda can we make progress for Americans who are clearly demanding change in the economy, immigration, crime, and other top issues. I am no dupe. Some of Trump's actions offer little reassurance that he is ready to embrace the bipartisanship and compromise essential to a functioning democracy. His radical cabinet picks, such as Project 2025 contributor Russell Vought and Matt Gaetz, now withdrawn. His last-minute demands on last month's government funding bill and the recent demonstrations of hubris, such as Republicans bringing Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy to Capitol Hill and refusing to include Democrats in the meetings, offer no reason for optimism about compromise. But if Trump wants to have a more effective presidency than he had in his first term, he needs to embrace his inner dealmaker and negotiate with the other party that holds just shy of half the seats on Capitol Hill and key governorships across the country. And if he does that work, Democrats should meet him halfway rather than the party of no. I know many voters reject my party's significant leftward shift. So do I. But as a common-sense Democrat who won in a district that Trump also won, I am certain our closely divided electorate would rather have bipartisan solutions than political gridlock. After Trump almost caused a federal shutdown with the funding bill antics, the government was able to stay open only through Democrats joining with some Republicans to pass compromise legislation. Americans should not have to hold their breath to see if we will do the right thing together. The election was a mandate, but it wasn't for a one-party rule. Trump won with less than 50% of the popular vote, and Republicans have thin majorities in the House and the Senate. But as I see it, the results of the 2024 campaign were a mandate for border security, immigration reform, low inflation, economic stability, and common ground on culture war fights. That's good for America. So let's make that our shared agenda in 2025, where a majority of votes for all of it. And let's try something different when it comes to the president-elect. And now, now, again from the New York Times, this by Hank Sanders. Letter calling for tracking people of color circulates in an Oregon county. The letter, distributed in Lincoln County, Oregon, tells community members to report people who may be undocumented, the sheriff's office said. A letter circulating in a coastal county in rural Oregon encourages community members to track and report people of color who may be undocumented immigrants, according to the sheriff's office, which discouraged residents from heeding the call. In a news release, the sheriff's office for Lincoln County, Oregon, condemned the letter and advised residents against collecting or sharing information about individuals based on their demographic or perceived immigration status, quote, unquote. The letter told people to write down the license plates of cars driven by people of color in order to identify people who might not have permanent legal status. It told people to send the information to the Department of Homeland Security shortly after January 21st so that the department could round up, and that's a quote, undocumented immigrants. Sheriff Curtis Landers of Lincoln County said in the news release, targeting individuals in this manner erodes trust and undermines the sense of safety and inclusion that we strive to maintain in Lincoln County, quote, unquote. The FBI said in a statement that it was aware of the offensive and racist mailings sent to individuals and organizations, quote, unquote, in the county, which is about 120 miles southwest of Portland and has a population of about 51,000 people. It includes a portion of the Oregon coast and more than 500,000 acres of forest lands. Sheriff Landers said that he received a copy of the letter in his mailbox. It was not clear how long copies of the letter have been distributed. While the letter itself is protected speech under the First Amendment, Sheriff Landers says that acting on the demands of the letter may violate Oregon law. Oregon has a variety of laws in place that protect immigrants, including sanctuary state laws, which mandate that people, quote, may not be investigated, unquote, by the local or state authorities for immigration enforcement purposes, which is also a quote. The Attorney General of Oregon, Ellen Rosenblum, also condemned the letter. Attempts to intimidate our communities and their leaders through racist letter-writing campaigns has no place in Oregon, Ms. Rosenblum said in a statement. President-elect Donald Trump has vowed to reduce the number of immigrants that enter the United States and has promised to increase deportations. In his first term, Trump tried unsuccessfully to end the temporary protected status for many countries, including Sudan, Haiti, and El Salvador. He also stepped up efforts to build a wall along the southern border with Mexico and to increase deportations of immigrants living in the country illegally. Vice President-elect J.D. Vance promised that the administration would, quote, stop doing mass grants of temporary protected status, unquote, which allows people to stay in the United States for a period of time if traveling back to their home country is deemed to be dangerous. And that was letter calling for tracking people of color circulates in an Oregon county and was written by Hank Sanders for the New York Times. He is a Times reporter and a member of the 2024-25 Times Fellowship Class, a program for journalists early in their careers. This is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout is this radio rant's engineer. remember this. Project 2025 is a design and a plot to eradicate American democracy by Republican reptiles, with apologies to real life snakes, lizards, etc. And also that tobacco bosses are America's Mass Murderers Incorporated.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on A Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.